He's the home voiceover studio engineer to the stars in Los Angeles, California. A Virginia Tech grad whose knowledge of the latest recording gear is second to none. He's a voice actor and the home studio master, hailing from Buffalo, New York. His home studio skills and knowledge of voiceover recording is unmatched. When Dan and George talk shop, people listen, and the talk continues tonight. Welcome to East West Audio Body Shop. And now, live from his high-tech facility in Santa Monica and his penthouse studio in Buffalo, here are George Whittam and Dan Leonard.
Thank you, Dave Quavassier. Good evening. I'm Dan Leonard in the East.
And I'm George Whittam in the West.
And together we are East West Audio Body Shop. Well, another Sunday night. And here we are. And you guys obviously had nothing better to do, so here you are, too. We're here for our 101st episode. Can you believe that? 101 episodes.
Starting to learn to believe it now.
Yes, we're actually learning how to do this most of the time.
Yeah, I don't know. There's certain things that get easier, and then there's, you know what happens when things get easier? You get lazy.
You get lazy.
And that's when stuff starts going wrong, you know? So we're all learning. It is like flying a jet aircraft or flying commercial aircraft. The checklist these guys read over and over and over. Really? They've probably read it 3,000 times. Exactly.
All right, then.
But you have to do it. You have to do it. It's all part of keeping those people alive. And which that one pilot had to do in San Francisco, that crash landing, scary.
Yeah.
Seriously, scary.
I got to land there in a couple of weeks, so there's nothing more fun than coming in San Francisco. That and Midway. Mm. And then, you know, anybody who's ever landed in Midway knows
what
I'm talking
about.
Because
it's right over the water, you mean?
No, Midway is in the middle of a neighborhood in Chicago. You know, you're landing, and you look out, and you see people waving from their pools in their backyards, you know, like reaching up and grabbing the wheels. It's kind of freaky. But anyway, not that I don't love to fly. So
I don't love to fly.
I love to fly.
Really?
I hate the takeoffs, the landings, and being in the air and the turbulence.
Right, exactly.
But on that, I love it. It's great stuff.
That's great. Oh, baby. Well, I just came. I'm glad to be here because my car decided to start running on two cylinders on my way down the hill from taking my daughter to see the zoo today. We went to the LA Zoo, and we filled up with premium gas, got on the freeway, and as I'm getting on, check engine light starts flashing, and I'm on 2 out of 4 cylinders. I can tell because it's like, felt like a Model T all of a sudden. 4 ways on the freeway flashing, and I'm thinking, holy smokes, what am I going to make it? I call Amy, and I'm like, hey, just so you know, I may not make it home. You might have to host the show. And then she laughs at me. So anyway, I'm here. I'm alive. And the car started running on the way home. I think as soon as I crested the top of Sepulveda Pass, the big top of the hill, all of a sudden it felt like, boom! The car exploded to life. It's like it's the horse of the barn thing, you know? And
is that where all the oil wells are?
Oh, no, that's another area. So Sepulveda Pass is where Mulholland Highway goes across.
That's
there.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Been there many
so
times.
I'm glad
we'll be there again.
Glad to make it. Glad to make it home.
I'm glad you're there, too, because otherwise I'd just be me, and they'd just be staring at me and not even hearing me. But anyway.
I love my old car, but it's starting to really feel like an old car more and more. So.
Yeah. Time to buy a Prius.
I'm going to let it go. Yep.
Anyway, we have a fabulous show tonight if we ever get past all this mundane BS that we give you every week, because we have real lives just like you. But we have a great guest tonight, a guy who knows an awful lot about what I refer to and he refers to as radio production, the end use of the stuff that most of us do, which is dry voice. Well, somebody's got to put the music behind it and someone's got to put all the effects on it. And that's what Ryan Dreen does, and he'll be our guest a little bit later on. I'm sure you'll have a number of questions for him. I know I have a few because he's sort of followed in my footsteps by about 20 years.
Right. Plus, he'll be able to add the fact that he is also a working voice actor, so he's got both sides of the equation like Dan, and so it'll be good perspective.
Yeah, but he doesn't know what a record is.
Or reel-to-reel tape.
Yeah.
He and I are close in the same generation, actually. He's my brother's age, so.
Ah, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm older than both of you, and I'm probably older than most of you guys, so... Which is makes me feel superior.
Oh, yeah, right.
All right. Anyway.
Let's get to it.
Why don't we get to what we actually came here to talk about, which is your home voiceover studio and all that neat stuff that makes it work the way it should. So yeah. Why don't we start off with what you're going to talk about tonight?
Sure. Well, I thought, you know, I don't often have a lot of random microphones laying around. I used to have a huge collection, and I sort of sloughed it off and kind of, you know, pared down a bit. So, but I happen to have a mic that we love to talk of. We've been loving talking about lately, and that's the CAD E100S. So I've got one sitting here. It's right off camera. So let me tilt our pan camera slightly so you can see it on camera. There it is. It's the CAD E100S. Comes in this lovely, very lovely cherry wood like box. I don't know if it's actual cherry wood, but I would doubt it, but who knows. Packed very carefully, very carefully and caringly.
You could actually bury a small person in there.
Yeah, it's perfect for, it doubles as an urn. Hey, you know what? I'm putting that in my will. I want to be buried in a Neumann U87 microphone box. That's actually a great idea. Anywho, so it comes packaged very carefully and nicely. This microphone is of their U.S. They can actually call it their USA series because they have a non-USA line of microphones. So they're much less expensive, $100 and under kind of mic range, or are not U.S. made. But this one is, and it's one of the few that are these days. And but that's still an affordable microphone. Right? By affordable, this falls right into that like mid-range $500 mark, where there's a lot of better microphones, obviously, for a lot more money. And there's quite a few at the, below, but this one falls like right in the middle of that kind of a sweet spot. There aren't a lot of other mics that are in that price range, and I think this thing competes nicely with mics that cost a lot more. Uh-oh. So let's talk real quick about why we love this mic and why this microphone gets so much getting so much talk lately. For one thing, A, it's relatively affordable, so we covered that. B, it's made in the USA. Some people really love that. C, it has some great features built in, like a pad, which we almost never need. But it also has a high-pass filter, a little switch on the front of the microphone. I'll twist it around. And while I'm demoing the mic, I'll switch to the 416 so you can see it a little bit better. There we go. So you can see it has it's got a pad switch and a high pass switch. A little note on the pad switch. I actually thought of a relatively decent idea of what to use the switch for. We don't really scream into our mics all that much, so it's really rare that we'd need something like that. But what it could be useful for is, let's say you do two sort of general levels of read. One is sort of your even keel, day-to-day read, commercials, narration, whatever. But all of a sudden, you have to do something either a hard sell, shouty read, or you're going to do an audition for a video game or something where you have to get a lot more dynamic. Is Ustream acting up again today? Yeah, Ustream is acting up again today, isn't it?
A little bit, but yeah, you're okay now.
It's being poopy today.
Yeah, it's freezing up.
Yeah, yuck. Well, we'll soldier on because at least it's recording.
Right.
So anyway, the pad switch could actually be useful because instead of you having to go over to your mic preamp now and back it down 10 dB and have to remember that setting every time and do it over and over, just flick that pad switch on the mic and keep going. You know, I think it could be a pretty useful feature to the microphone. I've actually told a few people that trick, and it seems to have helped their workflow and made it easier for them to kind of switch back and forth between auditioning and a really high-intensity read and then going back to a low.
Yeah, we're having some major buffer issues.
Oh, here. I know. It says bandwidth warning right now, so I'm going to prepare
so
it for...
How did we fix that last week?
Well, last week we just quit Ustream Producer and started again, which is actually what I did about 10 minutes ago. Mm. So I don't really know how or why that could make a difference, but Mike Varela thought of that. So if it's continuing this pattern for the next 10 minutes, I will try that.
It's gone black, so...
Well, I got full bandwidth. It says it's working beautifully.
Okay, well, you seem to be back on now.
Yeah, it's buffering like crazy, right?
It was.
Oh, boy. Ustream Producer.
Seems to be okay now.
Yeah, it's going up and down. It's being... fluctuating. So anyway, the pad switch could be useful if you have to switch to a high intensity read. But a few other facts about this mic that make it so desirable, and I will pan back, or crossfade is the right word, back to the CAT E100S. It's very, very low noise. It's supposedly rated at about minus, or what is it, 4 dB, what's the rating actually called? 4 dB something, dBFS?
Yes.
Might be on the box, because it's a number they should be pretty proud of. Yeah, self-noise, 3.7 dBA, and they even have the guts to put it on the box. It says best in class. That is pretty much best in class. I mean, that is an extremely low self-noise microphone. So you're not going to have to worry about the microphone being a weak link in the studio at all when it comes to noise. The other thing, to kind of wrap this up, is it's super cardioid. So it has a pretty tight pickup pattern. Right now I'm speaking across it, obviously, so I can be more on camera. But as you can see, that actually works really well. You don't have to speak right at this microphone. In fact, I don't recommend that you do it because it's pretty pop sensitive. And I am using the high pass filter, so if I turn that off and go flat, now P's should pop a lot more plosive. Yeah, a lot worse than the plosives.
Very plosive.
But I find the high pass filter helps with the pops. And then, of course, addressing it off, not off axis necessarily, but speaking across the microphone. So the diaphragm of the mic is still pointing at my mouth, or right in front of it, and it's still about 6 to 8 inches away, but I still sound like I'm on microphone, and that's what you're going for. So as you can see, it doesn't sound drastically different when I look right at it and when I speak a little bit past it, which makes it really easy to work this microphone, I think. It really does sound pleasant. It's not overly bright. How's it coming across to you, Dan?
It sounds, you know something, as far as microphones are concerned, it sounds like a good microphone.
Sounds like a good microphone. Let me just double check my EQ, make sure there's nothing funny going on with a EQ cut or boost. Let's
see. Dun, dun, dun. People are commenting on how they love your shirt.
Oh.
There was a little bit of EQ on it, I just noticed on my mixer, because it's just going through a
different
Mackie. Yeah, it had the bottom
different
end rolled off pretty severely. So now it's flattened out. So you're getting a little bit more fullness. And the 416 was also EQ'd a little bit. Let me flatten that out and then switch back. Because I know these two mics get compared a lot. So now we're on the 416. Needs a little bit more gain.
Can't really hear the difference, to tell you the truth.
You know, yeah, I mean, once you're especially getting compressed over Skype, but they are not drastically different. Not drastically different. So if you're looking for a mic that has that sort of 416, a little bit aggressive sound, very directional, more forgiving about acoustics, you know, the CAD may be a mic that you want to consider. But I'll tell you, and I just crossfaded back. It has a little bit wider pickup pattern, so it hears a little bit more background noise. You can hear the fan on my Mac Mini spinning away a little bit more on this mic. But really, if you're going to travel, if you're a real road warrior, though, I don't think I'd want to travel with this mic. I think it's a little bit delicate. I've heard of a couple of people complaining about delicate, you know, failures. And the 416 is an awesome travel mic. It's definitely built for the road. So anyway, there's a little comparison. I hope that helps inform your opinion.
I am totally informed.
Cool.
I'm totally there.
And next week, this mic will go into the studio where it belongs. So that was my last chance to get a demo.
Okay. Well, no, it works. It actually sounds, you know, you can... You know, I think the thing is that you can generally tell a good mic from a bad mic, because most bikes are about the same price as a mic. Actually, most mics they're essentially the same. But as you get into the cheaper mics, what is wrong with this brain? Because I'm tuned
if
in.
If it's not one thing,
tonight.
It's another.
If it's not one thing, it's my brain, which I'm starting to notice is just starting to fade a little bit. But now, where someone's wondering about prices of the CAD 100E.
Okay, yeah. I mean, somebody said recently that he saw it for under $300. That's sort of like the stole it, fell off the back of the truck price. I think the real price of this thing is about $499.
But
look around,
bad.
You can find it for less than $499 if you're a real hardcore bargain hunter. Yeah.
Oh, all right.
So there you go.
Excellent. I know Paul Strickland is going to be very happy to hear that you like that mic, because that's his favorite mic, too.
We talk about it a lot on the VOBB, and we love it over there. And Paul, who actually has a very, very nice German microphone, yes, the Gefell M930, he still loves this one for about a third the price. So.
Yeah. And coincidentally, today's his birthday. So happy birthday, Paul.
Happy birthday, Paul.
Alrighty. Well, on that note, I guess we'll keep the party going, and we'll be right back with more stuff after this. So stay right where you are.
Are you planning on doing tonight? I thought so. Now back to East West Audio Body Shop with Dan and George.
Hey, we're back. All right. Boy, it is a party in there. It's Paul Strickland's birthday, one of our favorite guys, so happy birthday to him. And we got more stuff coming up in a little bit. We've got Ryan Dean. Ryan on the radio is going to be joining us in a few minutes. Mm-hmm. And barring any technical difficulties, we'll actually continue on with the show. We need Click and Clack to help us out tonight. You're having problems with the car. We're having trouble with this.
I know, man. I would love to have their ear right now, I'll tell you that.
Oh, they'd be
exactly
laughing at us.
You're still driving that old piece of crap. They'd say something like that. I love them. I mean, they're the you know, that's what kicked this. That's what made this show kind of come to life, was that show. You know, that was a big part of our influence.
It was. And we happened to be listening on the exact same day, and we were talking. Hey, did you listen to Car Talk this morning? Yeah, that was great. And that's when this suddenly exploded in our heads.
That's right. That's right.
101 episodes later, you're suffering through it tonight, too.
Just sit back and relax. It's time for some announcements.
All right. We got a lot of stuff going on here. Okay. First off, have you taken the survey? We want you to keep taking the survey. Even if you took it once, take it again. Maybe your opinions have changed.
It's sort of a living, ongoing survey, but appreciate everybody has. We've had over 50 people fill it out. It's on ewabs.com. It's right on the homepage. You can't miss it. It's near the top. Just helps us shape the future of the show, and we are definitely doing some future shaping.
Shaping, yes, we are. It's a living, breathing document.
Mm-hmm.
How does that sound? Okay, let's see. Oh, the DLF VoiceOver Lab Poker Classic is on August 24th. Info at sagfoundation.org.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, I wish I could be around for that this year. One of these years, I'll be there for that.
You're traveling a lot this year, so I guess you can't make everything, right?
No. I'll be there. I'll be close, but by a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So I'll miss it by 22 days. But what am I? What can I do?
Yeah.
But you guys should go because you got to support the DLF Lab.
It's a great organization, and it's going to be a fun event. I'll be there documenting it, and hopefully we'll get some footage that we can share on a show.
Yeah, and we got a big show coming up on the 28th.
Yeah,
I was gonna say 28th. On August 28th, we're gonna be joining up with our good friend, the lovely and talented Anne Ganguze.
July.
Did I say July?
You said August.
I said August.
Yeah.
Can we reboot me?
You need a reboot.
Oh, man.
Hey, that's what I'm here for. I'm just here to make corrections. That's all.
Maybe I'm dehydrated. Let me just hold on a second.
Dehydration break. Or hydration break.
Oh, that helps. Oh, that's smooth.
What was in that water, Dan? That didn't look like water.
It's purple stuff. I have found the answer to how to really use a SodaStream machine. Instead of using that thick syrup that they give you,
right.
which is great, use Mio.
Oh.
It's got it's just sort of sweet, sort of flavors it. How's that? All
right?
That's right. What were we talking? Oh, we're going to be on July 28th. I said it right that time. We're going to be at Angangoose's place with the voiceover peeps, and we're going to do EWABs in Irvine.
Yep.
And we'll both be there. One of those rare occasions when George and I actually sit together in the same camera.
I know. We're going to have to be careful not to cross the streams or something.
I know. Although Ann has some ideas about that, too. But that's going to be a lot of fun. Do not miss it. That's going to be a fun show.
The audience is already booked. I think she's already got her 40 or so people capacity crowd that will fit in her living room, dining room area. So, but wow. It's going to be a good time.
I know. And the food, I hear, is fabulous.
Oh, yeah. Her husband cooks. Man, does he cook well.
Can't wait. Now, we want you to plan ahead. This is like the minor announcement. We'll do the big announcement on the 28th. But we're going to start doing the show on Monday night. Same time, same bat channel. But we're going to give you guys your Sunday nights back so you can have time with your families, which obviously you value since you're here every Sunday night.
I know. Now they've spent the last 2 years convincing their family that they should be actually doing this instead.
Right.
Now they're going to get their Sunday nights. We're not going to know what to do with ourselves anymore. I'm going to be sitting here at 6:01 on Sunday nights going, wasn't I doing something? Oh, yeah, the show.
Yeah, I can watch Dexter when it's actually on and Mad Men and stuff anyway.
So right about now, everybody in the chat room should start going, no, that stinks.
What, do you have bowling night that night?
There's always something. Oh, maybe it's the buffering because Ustream is buffering like a bandit right now. Up and down.
See, it'll be much better on Monday nights.
I hope so. I hope everything is just better on a Monday night.
Right.
The show, my energy, our energy, our brains. You know, we'll have had a fresh day, a fresh start to the week. Then we do the show.
That's right.
I think it's going to be better all the way around.
I think so too. Well, let's see. And please, you know, after tonight, still please like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at @EWABS_show, and subscribe on YouTube in case you missed us tonight, in which case you're going, I don't know what I'm missing because you're not watching.
Right.
But you always catch the show afterwards on YouTube, especially on if things start breaking up because George actually takes crazy glue and glues it back together.
I absolutely do. I've had to do that more lately with Ustream misbehaving. So, and I also have a subscribe link on the top of ewabs.com. So if you're wondering, how do you subscribe to a show on YouTube? I've never done that before.
It's right over here.
Yeah,
right,
just click there. On that button. Is it up there or up there? I don't know.
I don't know. It's up there somewhere.
So, let's get to the phone patches.
That's right. Ryan Dreen will be joining us in just a couple of minutes. But here's my tip of the week.
Let me fly it in because I have to do it the old-fashioned way tonight.
All right.
So I'll just drag that over and just do this and then do that and then
play it.
Do this
and that.
And then do this.
When I cut my first spot in a professional studio in 1979, I remember the producer talking to the client over a phone patch and playing for him or her the finished spot. Now, a phone patch is a device that takes your line-out audio and steps it down to a compression that a regular phone can handle without too much loss in quality. Every time I hear the term phone patch today, all I can think about is the cast from Mad Men sitting around a speakerphone listening to a read of an Old Gold's ad. It's old, outdated technology. Yet, some diehards still cling to it. I get these panicked emails and calls from people saying a new client wants them to use a phone patch, and they have no idea how to get one or set one up. This falls under Dan's list of things you have no need for. And ad execs who think you should use it for them simply don't get the reality of modern technology. Oh, sure, you can go out and get a phone patch hybrid device for about $300. But why bother? First off, don't confuse a phone patch with ISDN. ISDN is strictly for allowing you to record remotely at almost full fidelity to another studio, and so they can talk to you. It's not cheap, as I'm sure some of you now know. A phone patch is technology designed to patch ham radios for long-distance phone calls. Pretty useful. During the Korean War, maybe. If a client asks you for a phone patch to listen to your recording session, suggest to them some alternative, like Skype. They can actually watch you and listen to you and talk to you over a digital connection. And they can do it all on their laptop. Duh! It's not hard to do, and with a simple mixer, you can reroute the audio back into your Skype input. If you want, George and I can show you how. But if you really want to simplify things, try this.
Yeah, it's this simple. Okay, you ready to go? Okay. Dan Leonard, take one. And that's my tip of the week.
I think you better put on your flame retardant suit now, Dan.
Why?
Because Roy in the chat room is like, I use my phone patch all the time and I make money using that thing.
Grow up.
No, certain parts of the industry do heavily rely on the thing, but most of us, it's just not necessary to have the extra gear and the extra cost and complexity.
You set up on your end? Okay.
Yeah, that's true.
Come on.
I mean, how many phone patches a week do you think, if you could count? Not often. Yeah, exactly.
Zippo.
Yeah. So, I mean...
They trust me.
Yeah. So, I mean, you represent a good chunk of the voiceover talent pool out there. And then there's still, like, another big chunk that I think rely on. Actually, we'll have Ryan weigh in on
that,
too.
I was going to say, I'll bet you Ryan Dreen has some stuff to say about that.
Yeah, I'd love to have him weigh on it, too.
All right.
But anyway, yeah, Skype. One word, Skype. I know you guys here is... complain about Skype a lot, but it really does make a really good phone patch. I've been using it as my phone telephone in my office now for about 5 years, and it's fantastic.
And I'm coming to you via Skype now, so as you can hear, it sounds fabulous, and I look spectacular.
Yeah, and you can use it as a regular old telephone. Get a Skype phone number, and you can make a phone call, and I'll call in there if you need to.
It's amazing. Mm-hmm. Phone patches. Okay. Anyway, Ryan Dreen's coming up here on East West Audio Body Shop. Get your questions ready. We got lots too, so stay tuned. We'll be right back after this incredibly.
VO Studio Tech. Recording made simple.
Hi, I'm Peter McHugh.
This is Jim Tasker from Los Angeles, California.
Hi, this is Bill Ratner in Los Angeles.
Hi, this is Scott Rummel here in Yorba Linda, California.
Hi, my name is Rick Wasserman.
Hi, this is Tom Kane.
Hi, my name is Vanessa Marshall.
Hi, my name is Zurich.
Hi, I'm Mary McKittrick.
Randy Thomas chiming in.
Hi, this is Joe Szymanski.
Hey, this is Rick Robles.
Hi, my name is John Patrick Armstrong.
I was turned on to George by none other than Don LaFontaine, who always swore by his helmet.
George is absolutely awesome.
ISDN, Source Connect, Phone Patch, FTP, you name it, Georgia set it up.
It's really the best thing I've ever done for myself. I feel free, safe, fearless, like anything is possible in here.
Unless you like to look for opportunities to waste time, call George.
And he did all of that, long distance over the phone and the internet.
I'm very happy with George, and I cherish him.
Thanks, George. You make it easy.
And now back to the only webcast done with two cans, two geeks, and a string. East West Audio Body Shop with George Winham on his end in the West and Dan Leonard in the East.
All right, we are back. The string is nice and tight now, though. That's what makes it work good. And let's welcome our very special guest tonight, who's going to tell us all sorts of fascinating stuff about him and the fascinating stuff he does. Ryan on the radio. Ryan Dreen, how you doing tonight?
I'm good, guys. I appreciate you having me on.
Our pleasure.
I'm glad you could make it.
Yeah, we were going to have you on a few weeks ago, but things change. George had to go do something, and anyway. But Ryan, you're a busy guy. I mean, you voice and produce commercials. You do radio imaging, station sound, and audio branding for radio stations and networks across God's green earth,
yep.
All over the place.
Yeah.
How did you get started doing that kind of stuff?
I think really it was because of a flood. And everybody
another God thing.
Yes. Everybody got washed away. And then I showed up a week later and said, hey, anybody got anything for me to do? And it was a college station at Colorado State University. And there literally was like the flood of the century. I don't know what the proper term for that is. But so the station got washed out and they put a temporary station up literally next door to my fraternity house. And so that's how lazy I am. I said, well, if they're going to build it next door, I'll walk over there. And they said, yeah, we have nobody. So you can be the afternoon guy. And we've also got this other room that is a production room. And here's this brand new piece of software. We're starting to get some money with flood insurance. So try this out. And so, yeah, that's pretty much I started because nobody else was there, I think, is the short answer.
That's always the best way.
Yeah.
Reduces the competition. That's a very, I think, a lot of guys who got started in radio, it always is somebody wasn't there, somebody got sick,
yep.
And they went, hey, you. And yep. That's how I started. Same thing.
In my case, it was 9/11. It's a long story, but that's how I got in the business.
Wow. So, worse than a flood that didn't really kill anybody then.
Yeah. So, that was in Boulder, Colorado?
Fort Collins, Colorado.
Fort Collins, just north of there.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
All right. So you started doing all this stuff, and but you drifted more into the production end of things. How did that occur, and how did you learn how to do that?
Yeah. The short answer is I did both for a few years, and then eventually in radio, if you're the talent. You can be fired at the drop of a hat any single moment for no good reason at any station, at any level.
And usually are, yeah.
Right. And the production guy seemed to have a lot more – I'm just silencing my phone. I apologize. The production guy seemed to have a lot more security, and I also liked it. And so I just sort of tried to make it a natural lean to that side of the business. And so by the time I came to Dallas, that was like the big gig for me. Going from what was, in radio, you kind of talk about it as market sizes. So you talk about, I'm working in market 100 or market one is New York and Dallas is market 5. And I got the job because I met a guy in New York when I was working in market 240. So I'm in like the armpit of New York City over in New Jersey. And I meet a guy who then gives me a chance to interview for a gig in market 5. So it was a large leap and I was way too excited. And that's when I said, all right, this production thing will be good. That's what I like.
Mm, you just made Uncle Roy real happy. He lives in Jersey. But anyway.
I like Jersey. Don't get me wrong. I just know the way people think about it if they're, if you're talking New York City.
Right, right.
I love Jersey. Nice there.
Okay.
I was there for 4 years. I liked it a lot.
Yeah. Now when I was doing radio production, when I first started doing it, we had a big Collins turntable with a big gear shift on it.
Yes.
And with belts that would turn these big black discs called records, and you would cue up the record and you'd rehearse it a couple of times and you'd hit record in this. And you'd use a grease pencil and a razor blade, not different from this one.
Oh, I thought you were talking about a Victrola there, Dan. You're not that old. I'm sorry.
No, I was not. We didn't wind it up. It had a motor. But you didn't have to do any of that, kid.
No.
How did you start to learn?
I never cut a piece of tape, but I think I kind of showed up like the day tape cutting stopped and software using began.
Wow.
And so, when I walked into the college station, there was reel everywhere, and everything was still on carts. Everything
what year was that?
Played off the cart. What's that?
What year was that?
That was when I showed up over there. It was like late 97 or 98. Yeah. I think it was in the summer. honestly can't remember, but it was sounds somewhere right, yeah. In my third-ish year of college.
A cart.
Yeah. Yep. And when you go into those stations, you'll see, you know, entire walls, 10 feet by 20 feet of those things. But so anyway, when I showed up, like I said, nobody was really there that knew anything. And there was, you know, one student station manager just trying to not do anything bad to make the campus say, okay, we're just going to take this away. It's just too difficult to get it going again. So anyway, they handed me Saw Plus. I think it was at the time it was called Saw Plus, and it might have been turned into Saw 32. It's a piece of software that looks like a whole bunch, well, 32 tape machines stacked on top of each other. But, you know, the audio is rolling in digitally. And at the time, there were people that were using that before me. That technology came out in like the early to mid 90s. But really, it hadn't caught on full until probably, you know, the middle to late 90s. And so I was just like lucky guy who never had to take his time cutting tape. And I just my learning curve started digitally, which was huge because I didn't have to do. I've seen production get done with the old school ways where you had to. You know, you had many cart machines lined up, you had multiple reel-to-reels, and then you had your destination where you were going to record to, and you had to produce your promo live. You know, so you got it all set up, but then you had to hit play on everything at the right time and have this whole promo with 57 effects and the voice guy and the music bed and then the hooks from the Madonna songs and whatever, and it all had to go live. And if you screwed one thing up, start over again.
You considered a rehearsal.
Yeah, I couldn't believe. It's hard for me to even think about that now, you know.
No, it's not hard for me to think about it. It was every day until they gave us a four-track quad machine.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's like, I punch in and do all that stuff. That was a nice transition when the digital stuff came around. But so you really learned in a very different way, I think, than a lot of people traditionally did. So you actually were able to do things that we really couldn't do before without a lot of effort. And so it was like probably like drawing with crayons, only with you it was like drawing with a good pen.
Yeah, right. It was like having, I don't know, like instead of using one good pencil, you now had this device with 40 good pens that all drew together or something.
Right.
With, you know, pretty effortlessly compared. My only problem that I had originally was since I was, you know, no one else that, not just in that building or on the campus, but no one else I even knew in life at that point was using this kind of software. So I just had to sort of, you know, dive in and just make mistakes. And the stuff, and I mean, I'm sure everybody who works in a creative field, when you go back and listen to the stuff you did in the very beginning, it makes you, you know, maybe want to throw up.
Or worse.
Yeah. And I've kept that stuff. And it's crazy how good I thought what I was doing, because it was this fancy software, how good I thought it was then and how really awful it is.
Yeah, I found some stuff on reel to reel and I'm playing it back and going, I'm amazed that I was able to do that, you know. And yeah. It's always fun to take the technology and push it just a little farther than perhaps anybody expected you to. You know, you tend to start thinking, oh, well, I could do this. Well, I could do that. When, of course, the guys in the big studios like Uncle Roy were doing this years and years and years ago, and they're thinking the same way. But thus, little guys were doing it too. So you do radio production. Now, how does radio – for those of you in our chat room and watching the show live – How does radio production really differ from the simple dry mono voice recording that most of us do?
Yeah, I mean, really at the end of the day, you know, what I do is make, I mean, it's branding. You know, at the end of the day, yeah. What I do is branding. And so, you know, if you're the radio imaging guy, you know, at once upon a time, any station worth anything would have had, you know, one guy that or gal, but back in the day it was often men, but that would kind of focus on the production for that station. Way back in the day, stations didn't really have anyone doing that. They would pay a lot of money to get jingles. Otherwise, there was really no radio branding, you know, right. Way back when. But once they started figuring out that they could actually market themselves, then they'd get these talented guys that could make, you know, radio imaging, branding, audio branding for the station. And then, you know, radio was blowing up and there was just so much money piling in. So they all hired the best guy they could. And I do my podcast, and I've had guys tell me about, you know, some of the ones that were really big in the late 80s through early 2000s, and the salaries that you could make in imaging, you can call it imaging, one station in a big market, but I mean, sick amounts of money. And nowadays, it's gotten to the point where a radio imaging person is probably producing the imaging, the branding for a station, for a group, potentially 8 stations at a time. And then they might have you working on other markets. Like, for example, my Clear Channel job in New Jersey, you know, I was brought in there to do middays on one station and produce the imaging on a different station. And by the time I left, I was producing imaging on 5 stations in market. I was the midday guy on one station, afternoons on a different station, weekends on a classic rock. And then I was producing imaging for 4 stations in the market over. You know, and that was the transition. Radio was just huge in the early 2000s, and then it hit its peak and all the money started going away. And so you had a guy who was doing one thing is now doing 10 things. Yep. So I probably went off on a bit of a tangent there. You might reel me back in here, but I don't know if that's informative, but that's kind of what it's become.
Yeah, no, the market has changed completely. That's really one of the things I wanted to talk to you about. But let's talk a little bit about the formatics. And, you know, if you're doing imaging, you know, you're doing branding for different stations. How does it really differ? I mean, honestly, I don't listen to the radio a whole lot anymore because everybody's got, you know, not even CDs. You just plug your iPad in and stuff, your iPod and your iPad. Some people use their iPad. But I mean, when I do listen, I'm listening to, you know, to satellite radio or my local station, which of course does imaging. But what are some of the different type of imaging formats and how do you adjust yourself to those?
I think a good imaging director will have a good PD. You know, in order to be really good as an imaging director, you're going to have a good program director. That's a PD, is a program director. You know, the guy who captains the boat of the sound of the entire station. So everything about what the jock says, everything about the music they're playing, everything about the promotions they do, you know, the tickets they give away, the money contests, right, whatever. And then the guy that produces the crap in between the songs, me.
Right.
So the first thing you really have to be on point on is who you're talking to. So if your target demo, if you don't know what that is, then everything else is going to fail. And if you know who you're talking to first, and a good PD will know exactly who you're talking to, and a good station, at least I should say, I think the most effective imaging campaign / just program of a station in general was focused at literally an example. I actually forget her name now, but at KSCS in Dallas, one of my favorite program directors, and I had many there, he basically named a woman who was 39 years old. And so we were talking to, let's call her Rebecca, 39-year-old, mother of 2, Rebecca, and that's who we're talking to. We're not talking to 900,000 people. That happens to be the cum of the station. We're not talking to women between 25 and 54, and we're not even talking to women between 30 and 40. We're talking to 39-year-old Rebecca, who has 2 kids, who might even have a job or 2, but who is, you know, the busy, working, fast-paced mom. And again, that's where it comes down to start there with your target demo. And every station should have that person.
Right. And how do you learn how to talk to that person? It's like, yes. How often do I get to talk to 39-year-old mothers? Well, you have to go out and seek a 39-year-old mother and see what she sounds like. And how do you relate to her? How do you get in rapport with it? Did you do that?
Yeah. I asked that. actually, I started dating one.
well, problem solved.
Yeah. Still with her. So she stuck around with me. But no. You know, in order to be real good, here's the other thing that I noticed. You know, the radio imaging types, especially if you're the voice talent, you might have been you might have interacted with your producer at station XYZ. And oftentimes they tend to be the guy that's a little nerdy. He's probably into some weird TV shows and maybe likes card games or whatever, but doesn't necessarily get out enough. And in order to be the talented, you know, the successful imaging producer, you really need to want to get out, and you need to really want to get out and do what your station is doing. And so that's, you know, tip number 2. Don't just figure out who your demo is, but really figure out, you know, what it is your demo is doing, and you need to go out and do that. Either consume the products, you know, a lot of pop culture, especially, I'd say, I don't know the percentage, but most of radio is being directed towards some form of a woman demographic. There certainly is talk radio being geared towards men, obviously sports, and then rock radio, but rock radio is dying fast and hard over the last years.
Yeah, 30 or so.
Yeah. So you need to get out there and consume what your listener is consuming, and whether and that might mean you need to watch the E Network for a couple hours a week, and you might hate it, but you really need to know what they enjoy, and you need to watch local news. I don't like local news at all. I'm not going to go into it, but I had to force myself to watch it and understand why it's important, and I do understand why it's important. But you know, you need to do what your listeners are doing.
Right. Yeah, it's hard to believe that, you know, we don't really want to watch the stuff that we've, you know, that really is the bread and butter of a lot of our business. You know, like, you don't like to watch the news. I mean, I like to watch the news, but I don't listen to the radio. And if I do, if I'm listening to a local talk station or something like that, and I'll hear a spot, sometimes I hear my own voice in there and I go, oh, well, now this place has gotten better. which isn't a whole lot.
A lot of actors don't watch what they act in either.
Well, that's true.
Maybe that's for different reasons, but.
Right. Well, this is all very fascinating. We got a lot more to talk to with Ryan Dreen about. And if you've got some questions, throw them into the chat room. We'll get them on here. And but right now, we got to talk about a good friend of ours. We call him H2, but most people know him as Harlan Hogan.
That's right.
And Harlan Hogan owns a great little website for all you voiceover folks and for people ancillary to voiceover, like guys who do radio production and do imaging and stuff, especially if they have a home studio. We'll talk to Ryan about that. But all you got to do is go over to VoiceOver Essentials, because Harlan has the best stuff there is for voiceover. He's made the decisions. He's made it easy for you. Because he has access to everything there is, but he's also designed, of course, his own line of stuff, like, of course, the legendary Portabooth, which he invented in a hotel room, along with a lot of other suggestions on how to record on the road. And he also came up with the VO1A microphone, which is actually really good for the price point. And
it is really great.
And how does it compare to the CAD 100E?
Well, we need to get one in here, because every time that Harlan sends me one, I sell it. So we need to get another one in here and do a comparison.
And the one I had got lost in the mail. So Harlan, please send us another.
We'll have one at the VO Peeps thing.
We will. Yeah. So you'll actually get to hear what a great microphone that is. Mm-hmm. And of course, the Harlan Hogan Signature Series headphones, which we should all have. And I know I have mine here somewhere. Which they're great for doing voiceover work, because they're designed specifically for what you do, and that is dry voice. That doesn't accentuate the low end at all. They're comfortable, made with leather and memory foam and aluminum, and they twist like a Twist-O-Flex watch band. You can wear them for 3 days straight and not even know you have them on. All right, maybe that's a bit of an exaggeration. But go on over to voiceoveressentials.com and buy his stuff, because it is the best stuff out there. He's decided what's really good, making it easy for you, and he supports our show. So that's reason enough right there. So go on over to voiceoveressentials.com and get
buy something, and then tell him you heard about it here.
And you heard about it here. We recommended it.
Yes. Thanks a lot, guys. Thanks. Thanks, Harlan. We appreciate
it very much. We do. We really do. All righty. Back with Ryan Dreen. Now that you're totally bored with this.
I was going to say, when you were talking, I looked over. I have one of the porta boots, and I thought, sitting right here, I was going to pull it right up and say, look at this.
No, pull it up and show it. Pull it up.
Not grab here. It. I don't know.
Oh, darn.
I redid my studio on Friday. I'm at the home studio now. I do work in it. I have a daytime job, more of a production job. But anyway, Friday I had the whole day here, redid my whole studio, and I put it somewhere. I cleaned my studio.
It's behind something, yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. Mine's over there somewhere behind a bookshelf or something. So why don't we talk about your home studio a little bit here? What kind of gear do you have in there?
That was what I was doing on Friday. I sort of dumbed things back down a little bit.
Good.
Weeded it out.
I don't know how to angle this thing right. A dual monitor setup. I don't know if you can see that.
Just wing it. It's working.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got a couple of Alesis monitors, Alesis M1 Actives.
Ah, yeah.
I actually have a. I'll just put this back down. I have a Apex 230 channel strip.
Uh huh.
And I like it okay, but I've been sort of taking things back down to simple world. The mic I use is a 416.
Yep.
So I was running that into the 230, but I wasn't really doing anything with the 230 because everything I do now is in the box. You know, when you work in Pro Tools, I'll instantiate a lot of plugins on the fly, and so I will process the voice with software plugins as it gets recorded.
Uh-huh.
You know, so anyway, I just found myself using outboard gear less and less. I also have a DBX 286A, but I don't even use that.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to use a Digi 03 rack for my input, but again, total overkill because I'm just not doing any tracking here. You know, I'm not I'm not tracking more than my one mic, maybe two. So I actually just got. I'm kind of getting into Native Instruments products a lot. And the Complete Audio 6, their interface.
Yeah.
The reviews are really good on it. The quality of the preamp. And it's got two of them in there. And I love it so far. So now I have the 416 going direct into that. And then I have that going into Pro Tools, obviously. And I have an audio track plug-in. And then I put just a little bit of an L3 compressor on my vocal chain. But really, my studio comes down to that now. It's a Mac tower. What do you call it?
The Mac Pro.
Yeah, it's what do I have? Eight. I think it's an 8-core.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's an 8-core Xeon.
Yeah.
So for me, I need like the strength in the box when I'm using 57 plugins and 48 tracks on a big piece of production. But as a voice guy, everything else was overkill. So I just went to the single input audio device, the balanced audio input with the 416, and do everything else in Pro Tools.
Cool.
Yep. See, you've simplified, and that's what we like to preach here on the show is don't overthink it. And you did it, and you started. I know George loves doing this when he goes into people's studio. You just like unplugging
stuff
things.
Out.
To, yes. Right. And that's what you did. And
I love unhooking crap and having a big pile of cables on the floor.
Of my latest tear down of the studio.
Yeah.
That is still over in the corner.
That's awesome.
So
it's my favorite.
Yeah. So anyway, I just talked on my show. Do you guys know Mike Bratton?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Great guy, super talented, but I was kind of angling my talk with him as kind of like the young, I don't have anything yet guy, just to kind of see what. And yeah, man, breaking it down, the biggest thing you need is a good place to talk. A room. You need the place to talk in, and then you need the talent. And then, don't spend $4,000 on an Avalon and a $5,000 mic. Figure out how to talk first and get the good room.
That's right.
Yep.
He's one of us, George.
He's one of us. We agree. We definitely like agree on that, yeah. Right. So you've been doing about, before the show, you said that you've been doing about, if you look at your accounts receivable or whatever, your billing, about 50-50 voice acting now and production. So when did the voice acting start encroaching on radio?
I really started putting an effort into it. It's actually been a few years. It was kind of a slow go for me, to be honest, because I was so much the imaging guy, the producer guy.
Yeah.
And even at stations I was at where my voice might have actually fit, they were still like, you're our nerdy producer. You just stay back there and produce, and we'll go hire the voice talent, kid. And that was great. You learn a ton, and I got to work with a lot of different really good radio imaging voices. And so from, Jude Corbett is a guy who I really look up to, and working with him for a few years really helped me kind of figure out, where I can fit in. And then before that, though, Dave Fox, who's the voice of Z100 in New York, and other things, lots of other things. But he was one of the first voices I worked with, and you get to see how they do it. And not just not just technically speaking, but how they structure reads and how they deliver stuff and how they interact with their talent. Dave Fox is thought of in the radio imaging world as one of gotta be top three, definitely top five sort of royalty talents as far as a producer and a voice. And just the way that, you know, for his clients, you felt like you might have been his only client, even though you know he's not. But the way he treats the clients is that kind of a deal.
Yeah.
So that was back in 03. And so I started to kind of dabble, picked up my first sort of full-time station in probably, I don't know, 06-ish, let's say. And I had a few stations for a few years. And now I'm up to regular stations that I voice. And then some of them I also produce. But I've got to be in the 15 range. And then there's still a few other ones that I only produce. You know, those are nice because it's really my wheelhouse and I feel really comfortable doing it. And then also it's just, you know, nice regular monthly income that you can just count on.
Yeah. We've got a couple of questions from folks in our chat room who are populating it in a heavy way. Chris Tom asks, how can someone get started in imaging when you don't have the editing skills, and what's the best way to move forward?
Ironically, I just had a guy in Atlanta email me. He's really interested. I mean, really, the easiest, fastest, cheapest way, assuming you already have the ability to acquire, or you've already acquired a DAW, is what we call it, a digital audio workstation.
Right.
An editor, a Pro Tools, or Audition, or Cubase, or Logic, or there's all sorts of them. Anyway, YouTube, there's got to be millions now of tutorials.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's certainly thousands of great ones, but you really just have to start watching people do it. And it's the little things that you'll see, you know, the slapping of the stuff together, you know, voice goes here, music goes underneath it.
Right.
But it's really, to get good, you have to start paying attention to the way audio interacts with each other, knowing how to filter a voice so that it doesn't just smash into the bed or get lost, you know.
In the get buried down into the mix where you can't really
music. Yeah. And so those videos will show you how to use compression and EQ. Those are kind of your two main things you want to start to learn.
John, you want to learn how to. Our friends of the show, John Taylor, did a video on YouTube. How to build a radio spot in like 5 minutes flat using Adobe Audition, you know? So there's some amazing tools out there. Actually, how did you settle on Pro Tools over some of the others like Adobe Audition, which have always been more classically kind of radio production based?
Actually, and this is the story that I've heard from a lot of people in my business, I had to. Hmm. I got the job in Dallas. I mean, I had actually, when I was in New Jersey, they got me a Pro Tools machine and put it in my studio, but it was for another guy to use overnight. And I said, all right, maybe I'll start learning this. And, you know, 4 years went by, and the Dallas called and said, so I'm like, well, I guess I'm not learning that. And I show up to Dallas, and they're like, here's your studio, and it's amazing. And I'm like, well, what is this? So, like, that's your state-of-the-art Pro Tools rig, dual monitor setup. You got your Digio 2 mixer. That's the interface I had. And I'm like, awesome. I didn't tell anyone that I'd never used it before.
Don't let them
make
it till you make it. Yeah.
And I mean, I'm not kidding. I thought they're going to find out they hired the wrong guy. I mean, 2 weeks into this thing, they're going to be like, oh, what have we done? This guy's awful. He tricked us. And then the guy who hired me got fired 3 weeks after I got there. So then, but it was like there was so much other bedlam going on that I was able to sneak in and learn that thing, and it took me a couple weeks. But that's why I'm on Pro Tools, just because. And once you get, I'll say this, voice talents, you don't really need to be using Pro Tools. Don't think there's any reason you have to use Pro Tools. There's zero reasons. But if you want to do more than just record dry voice for clients, Pro Tools is the it's the one, you know. It's Britney Spears' albums, they're all done on Pro Tools. Justin Bieber's albums, all done on Pro Tools.
Who cares?
But Aerosmith's records, the day Pro Tools was released, they were all done on Pro Tools. Trent Reznor sits on an airplane and mixes Nine Inch Nails records on Pro Tools. So the top level stuff is done on Pro Tools, and it's, you know, it's the, the Rolls Royce of DAWs.
I call it the 800-pound gorilla myself, actually.
Yeah. You don't need to get yourself involved with it if you don't want to.
Yeah.
Right.
agree.
Especially if you're doing simple work and simple mono tracks, you don't need 800 tracks and all those effects.
Yeah.
You know,
I love the technique of tracking through your effects live, the way you've been saying. I've started teaching people how to do that. I'm like, well, if you've got Pro Tools and you insist on wanting to learn how to use it, let's make it do something. You know, let's not just record one track.
And you might have already mentioned this. Yeah. I want to say the big advantage of that, and I'll say two things about this. Pro Tools' biggest complaint, especially by voice talent and especially by talent doing long form gigs, is the no offline. Yeah, you have to real time bounce. There's no offline bounce. So in other words, if you want to save your file, you record the thing in, and you want to save it, you have to play it back in real time to save it, and that's BS
until Pro Tools 11.
Right.
So Pro Tools 11 comes out, finally.
Rewrites the script.
Yeah, I mean, the tech, it's been around for decades now. Well, whatever. So the reason I would process on the fly is because I'm not going to be handcuffed by the lack of Pro Tools features. So if you process yourself on the fly, then you can simply render your files as an MP3 or a WAVE, and you don't have to real-time bounce. So it just avoids that.
Right. And I think for a lot of people whose eyes are now rolling in the back of their head, See, the people who understand Pro Tools, they know what you're talking about. I think for the majority, they understand. But when you start talking about the bounces and all this stuff that most people really don't have to do, but they should know that it's done so they can work properly with someone like you if they're sending you tracks, which is something I wanted to ask you about.
I could also say this, the other thing I'll say, just as a guy who's now gone sort of 50-50 into both sides of the world, if you're a voice talent and or even just one starting out, but you don't have aspirations of producing, you know, big pieces of production, don't waste your time with Pro Tools. There's no need. You're gonna spend a little bit more money for something or a lot of things you won't use. Audition is a good place to start, but I know you guys talk Twisted Wave on the Mac.
Twisted Wave, yeah.
And then even Audacity, it's free, and that's on both platforms now. And really just don't think that the quality of the audio is degraded by the software you're using. It's not. Yeah,
that's a big misconception, I think. Yeah. I mean, there are certain things that we talk about, algorithms and how things are encoded. Some argue some things sound better than others, but overall, for the purposes of what we're doing, it doesn't matter. It's just a tool. People get caught up. Isn't it going to not sound professional unless I use Pro Tools? No.
It has much more to do with workflow than anything else.
Yeah.
You record 24-bit, 48K. That's 24-bit, 48K, whether it's in Pro Tools or Audition or in Twisted Wave or Free Audacity.
Oh, music to my ears.
Yeah.
Susan Bernard, the Yellow Rose of Texas, asks, do you think that social media like Twitter has changed radio in any way, seeing as you've been in radio and watched this transition? And do you think radio will actually be around in another 20 years? I know I have my opinions about it, but what do you think?
I'll answer the second one first. Radio will be around in 20 years because it provides a utility that there are certain utilitarian factors of it that nothing else has been able to provide yet. The free communication that anyone can get, no matter, you know, it's over the air. So at the end of the day, there are certain things you can do with radio that can't yet be done with any other form of technology. And then I have a lot of reasons why I think radio will be around, and it just won't be owned by corporations. I think that the big corporations – I'm not going to get into that. I work with a lot of them, and I don't want to
– Sure, we won't say that. Okay.
Don't burn any bridges.
No. I mean, I wouldn't burn a bridge, but there's no – I'm not a finance guy. So the first one is social media, and I like where I was. I've always been sort of a connected guy. I'm a gadget nerd, and I like to be – you know, hooked up to all the latest stuff. You know, I had a Tumblr account way back when till it became a porn site. And then, Twitter, I started way back when and just sort of watched how people use it. Yeah, if you want to, there's some,
let's not go there.
But anyway, so radio stations, it was funny because I'm in them thinking not only would they not promote a Facebook or a Twitter, you know, they would go out of their way to pretend like they didn't exist for so long. And it was weird to me to see how radio was already kind of thought of as it's not archaic to me, but it was thought of as a bit of an archaic technology and certainly a medium. But they would just do these things to, so finally when you see radio catch on in the last few years they have, especially CHR stations. And you see how much it brings back to the station by being, because now, you know, whereas before when you're a jock, you know, I did afternoons on a CHR and nights on a CHR for a long time. You kind of sit there and you play stuff and you wait for the people to consume you and contact you. Well, now you have this whole new way of contacting your listeners, you know, and every right. brand does, everybody, but everybody else was doing it for years. And then finally radio in the last few years said, oh, wow, wait a minute. So if we reach out to them, they might come back and listen more, and they certainly have. So certainly has been very important. And the stations that still kind of ignore it, I can't understand it.
Yeah, it's the business has changed tremendously. I got out of it in like 92 and said I got better things to do. But I'm glad that there's a cycle to the whole thing, and it's sure. you know, and certainly the ownership rules changed, and then but the market will always go to where the money is going to work best. So if it's going to be around, someone's going to take advantage of it. I keep thinking there's going to be a pile of AM stations that could be had for nothing, and somebody's going to come up with a really good use for those one of these days.
That would be interesting to see what somebody could do with the AM band. I don't know. I mean, at this point, it looks like it's just going to disappear. But, yeah, it'll be interesting.
Someone will come up with something. Chris Tom asks, which mic is better for imaging? Since we were talking about mics earlier, he says, I heard someone say to use an RE27, since that's what they use on the air. What do you think?
I would disagree with that, because the RE, unless I'm just having a brain fart, the RE27 is the big, fat, jock mic.
Right, the standard mic. Broadcast mic, right.
Yeah, it's a utility mic. It's made to be beaten around by dumb morning show jocks that, you know, don't know anything but yelling and screaming. And I'm being facetious, obviously. Morning talents is huge. But you know what I mean? They're made for men and women of all types, and they're really made to
put your lips up against it and scream, and it sounds okay.
Yeah, so I would disagree with that completely, and I think most of the big talent, in fact, I would venture to guess that anyone who makes a good living providing radio imaging VO does not use an RE27.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The Neumann line, a few of them, I know some of the big talent has the U87 or the TLM-103. The 416 is huge, though. I know many radio imaging talent that use the 416. It's very forgiving, but it has a very full sound. At least that's my opinion. I think the reason it has a very full sound in the bandwidth, in the spectrum.
Yeah, I think it sounds like it's already had a little bit of sweetening done right out of the mic.
Yes. Yeah.
A little compression and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why did I buy one sooner? Because it's now become my go-to mic. It just is perfect. You know, I don't even use a pop screen with it. So
I'm sorry, Dan. What size of a room do you record in, Ryan? Are you in a smaller booth that you set up for, or is that space you're in now is your actual where you cut?
Yeah, it's a bedroom. It's one of the bedrooms in my house, and I'm a big DIY guy, and I've probably seen some of your videos. Not probably, I certainly have, and stolen some ideas. And then, you know, I bought a bunch of acoustic stuff online and treated the room, so I've got panels all around. I've got ceiling panels.
You went with treating the entire room because you like to work in the same space. It's more comfortable. Yeah.
Yep. Because I don't want to have to get up and go into a booth. And also because, especially when I first started building this, I'm just a nerd and I wanted to learn how to do it and make the room cool.
Yeah.
Or, you know, good. But also, yeah, I'm producing a lot more than I'm voicing, and oftentimes I'm producing what I'm voicing. So I don't want to have to get up and go walk over to the closet and then come back.
Right.
I'm lazy. And then during the day, I work out of TM Studios in Dallas, and I have a room that's way too good for me there. It's a mastering suite that they gave me. That
killer.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. TM's been around a while. I bet they have really nice stuff. Yeah. I can remember TM on disc, you know, and the donut jingles and stuff like that. And they would customize the jingles and stuff, and that was big time stuff coming out of Dallas, and has been for like 40, 50 years. So you're with very good company there.
Yeah,
let's talk a little bit about your podcast. When did you start that, and how many episodes have you done?
Not as many as you. I've done in the neighborhood of 58. And those are basically, every one of my episodes is an interview, and I really just let the people I'm interviewing be the bulk of the show.
Right.
So anyway, I've done 58 episodes, ranging. I really try and keep everything to a radio imaging angle. So, for example, who's someone? Maurice Tobias, I know you interviewed, and anyone listening to this will have heard of her. I interviewed her, and, you know, she's like the coach of coaches, the voice whisperer, you know, the
right.
Maurice. But she affected the lives of so many people in the radio imaging VO world. So that was that angle that you might. Otherwise, everyone I interview has something to do with radio imaging, whether they are a producer, a lot of big time producers I've talked to, or voices, or people. I'm trying to think if there was anyone, you know, Vanessa Marshall, who you guys mm-hmm. know.
Oh, yes.
Great, great. One of my favorite female talents, but great imaging voice. But I mean, she's doing huge gigs on a national scale beyond radio imaging. I mean, I could rattle off a whole bunch of names, but.
Yeah. Well, I Ryan, it's great that you joined us this week, and it's amazing how the time goes when you're having fun.
I know.
You're talking to people you have a lot of rapport with, you know. I mean, it's like you're talking about stuff I understand it, George understands it, and it's always fun to talk to to people who we have a tremendous amount in common, and good luck to you, and thanks for all the great tips and stuff. It's important to hear from the guys who are on the other end from a lot of stuff that our folks are sending out to you, and it's good for them to know what you're doing on the other end, so they can think like an editor and record like an editor and give it to you, so you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, I don't know if I gave a whole lot of tips. I apologize if I didn't, but if anybody
you
has
did.
Questions for me, I'm happy to answer them, and hopefully my tangents weren't too long, and I appreciate you guys having me on.
And what's the easiest way to subscribe to your podcast?
I have little links on my website. iTunes. It's on iTunes. You know, any podcatcher, if you have your favorite podcatcher, mm-hmm. there's a link there that should be able to be consumed by it. My feeds lately, I've been using Feedly. I don't know if you guys like that one.
I use it.
But for a podcast, that's not necessarily ideal. iTunes is probably what most people use. But there's links right there on the main page of the site, ryanontheradio.com.
Okay.
And if you have any issues, email me anytime.
Thanks a lot.
All right.
We appreciate it. I'm a big fan of the podcast, and I'll continue having it in my feed every week. So,
all right.
Thanks for being a part of the show tonight.
Sure. Yeah. Thanks, guys.
All right. Ryan Dreen, Ryan
Take
on
care.
The radio. Thanks for joining us tonight.
All right. He's out.
All right. Okay. Well, boy, that was a lot of good information there. But it's always fun to talk to folks who do this stuff.
I know. We get to geek out. We get to have some fun with them. But it's what makes this show unique, I think.
That's right. Okay. Why don't you run the Vox spot, and then I got something else I want to talk about when we get back to that, if that's handy
around. You got it.
All right. We'll be right back after this.
VoiceOver Extra, the voiceover industry's online news, education, and resource center 24/7. Hundreds, probably thousands of free how-to articles for voiceover success, ranging from home studio to voice acting to business. A free voiceover industry directory, calendar of industry events, resource links, a store, and much more. Bi-monthly webinars on all topics of voiceover, free subscriptions to newsletters, reports, announcements, daily news, and features at voiceoverextra.com.
And now, back to East West Audio Body Shop, where every week, it's Apollo 13.
George. Anyway, you know, I'm participating in a project that I think many of you will be very interested in, and We're going to be doing that on it's going to be on September 18th through the 20th. It's called VoiceOver Virtual. It's going to be a virtual voiceover conference. For those of you who don't want to get on a plane and get a hotel room and stuff like that, you can hear some great people, and it's being put on by VoiceOver Extra. It's called VoiceOver Virtual. You'll get to learn all sorts of great stuff. There'll be lots of great vendors there. I've heard of some of the people are going to be there. You can network with other people online, and you'll just have a good time, because we're planning on making sure you have a good time. And you can register now by going over to voiceovervirtual.com. And there's the website right there with our good friend Dave Quavassier, who is going to be one of the main hosts for this. But this is the kind of education you really, really want. You're going to learn about the best stuff from audio, you know, about audiobooks and business and marketing and career advice and home studio stuff from, you know, some guys. and you'll learn about voice acting. There's going to be some great voice acting coaches that are going to be giving seminars on this. Top teachers, awesome access, pro on pro interviews, which, George, I believe you're working on.
I am, indeed.
You'll be able to do live consultations with some of these folks and access these recordings of these seminars and webinars for 2 months afterwards. So go on over to voiceovervirtual.com, check it out, and say, gee, this might be something I want to do on September 18th through 20th, 2013.
And then the content's available for some time afterward, right? So, like, if you can't be there live, you can catch it up till the end of the month, I think?
That's right. So go there. We'll be there. East West Audio Body Shop.
Virtually.
Of course, we'll be there. We'll be there virtually. Everything will be virtual. But it'll be actually like being there. Wait till you see the interface for this thing. It's absolutely amazing. It's like you're walking into this virtual convention hall. You know, sort of looks like those buildings that I saw in Valencia, Spain, that were like bigger than life.
Oh, beautiful.
It's really, really cool. Anyway, well, I think we're getting towards the end here.
But, yeah, I was just going to bring up
a couple of things we want to talk about.
Well, there was just one website that, or one product anyway, that popped up on my radar that I know absolutely nothing about. And I'm really curious to know if anybody in the chat room has actually used this thing. And it's made by Audiophile Engineering. It's called VoxOver. VoxOver. Mm-hmm. And they call it the Automated VoiceOver Batch Recording for Multimedia Program. And I was telling Dan about it earlier. What does that remind you of in the world of... This is a Mac program, by the way. This is for the Mac. Yeah. So this is like a Windows version or a Mac version of a Windows program. You guys have probably heard about at this point.
Speaking of Spanish, guys, it reminds me of Word to Wave.
Word to Wave, right. Yeah, so this sort of like... From what I can tell, is like the Word to Wave of
for Mac,
yeah. So just a quick rundown. VoxOver allows you to write or import a script and rapidly automate the recording of that script. The script can be displayed on VoxOver's unique teleprompter to the voice talent via your wired or wireless network. Sessions may be completely automated, completely free form, or anywhere in between. Takes are automatically created, named, and annotated as configured in your script. Takes may also be filtered, sorted, organized, rearranged, renamed, and exported anytime during the session. Pretty heavy duty, actually. So I don't know if you guys are doing stuff with lots and lots of prompts, or you're being directed, or you are directing somebody else,
or you're doing slides to PowerPoint presentations, yeah. Like all the presenters at VOV.
Yeah, this could be pretty killer. Yeah, it is expensive, so you know this is not something you're going to buy to dabble with. This would be you buy it because it's a huge time saver for you. It's all about, we always use the workflow thing, but this could be a tool useful for some of you. So it's over at Audiophile, that's audiophile-engineering.com/VoxOver, or go to the Mac OS X menu, VoxOver. This company is most known for making Fire, which I think was one of the first decent quality recording programs for an iPhone.
Had it on mine.
Yeah, and Fire 2, which is the last version, which is now owned by Rode Microphones. And Rode is selling it along with their the little stereo microphone that they make for the iPhone. So anyway, check that thing out if it's useful for you. I know it's a niche thing, but it just popped up on my radar.
It certainly is, you know, something that a lot of people do, though. So it's an interesting thing to look at. Well, next week, we have a great guest coming on. Somebody we've met before, and I was actually wearing this shirt last time I talked to him, interestingly enough. Paul Pape, who's another big-time Hollywood voice, big into ADR, is he not?
Yeah, that is definitely one of his major bailiwicks.
And a really nice guy and a fun guy to talk to. And he'll be joining us next week here on East West Audio Body Shop. So you do not want to miss that. And then, of course, in 3 weeks, we're going to be at VoiceOver Peeps for EWABs in Irvine. So anyway, but we got a lot of people to thank tonight, because we're actually going to finish right on time, because I promised my wife we would so we could watch Dexter.
All right.
So
she has it on pause right now for you.
She damn well better. Okay, so so tonight we'd of course like to thank, you know, Amy, George's wonderful wife, and my wonderful wife, Marcy, for putting up with this every Sunday night. Now it'll be Monday night. Kathy Curden for...
I hope that's better, by the way.
Well, we'll find out. And of course, Kathy for producing, and Anthony Getting, the both of them for helping us out in the chat room, Jason Lawson and Lee Penny for some production assistance, and of course, Larry Hudson and Sylvia McClure and Larry Davis and Elizabeth and Rosemary Benson, who I actually heard all of tonight for once, for our announcement and our bumpers and drops. And of course, more importantly, thank you for showing up here every week and making us do what we do, because we love doing what we do for you.
Indeed.
It's true. Anyway, but that's going to do it for us tonight. I'm Dan Leonard in the East.
And I'm George Whittam in the West.
And together we are East West Audio Body Shop. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next Sunday night with Paul Pape.
Good night, everybody.
Toodaloo.